Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Another episode of Mostly Lit with Ray. And who else do we have? Come on.
Derek.
Oh, God. Derek what? You always say you're...
Derek Owusu.
Thank you. God, why am I co-host so dead today?
T'Challis.
Okay, T'Challis, can you talk into the mic?
Yeah. T'Challis, I'm talking into the mic. Hi, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit.
You could never.
I can never what?
T'Challis.
T'Challis.
Okay.
T'Challis.
Like... Oh,
how's you guys' week been?
Exhausting.
Yeah?
I literally feel like I'm going to drop dead any minute.
Why is that? What, you have too much on this week?
Busy, like crazy. Like, I don't even remember the last time I ate, to be honest.
Wow.
I don't remember when I ate.
You're doing well at this adult life, innit?
Mate.
You meant to love it to be eating three meals a day.
I this morning I had a
being wholesome.
I had a coffee at a photo shoot. That's how bad it is.
Ooh, how was the photo shoot?
It was really good. I had a coffee at the photo shoot and I don't remember why. When I ate yesterday, I think I had popcorn at the Black Panther showing.
Mm. You think you had popcorn?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did you do, Derek? How's your week?
What have I done this week? It's been a bit crazy, actually.
Yeah.
Someone tried to beat me up at work.
Like physically?
Yeah.
Which wow.
Was what was fun. It? Like a fellow... employee?
No, customer.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything. They were just unhappy.
So they thought, let's beat you up.
Yeah, they thought let's have a pop at the manager. I thought, okay, cool, whatever.
Did you win?
I didn't fight.
That's the most important thing.
Like, this is what we need to know.
Did you win the fight? Did you win?
I didn't fight.
Oh, you didn't fight him?
Oh, he tried to fight you.
I just did my. The
folk fake apology.
It's, I mean, what can I? What else can I do? Yeah. I'm not gonna start throwing hands with a customer, am I?
So I literally just be like, well, I'm really sorry you thought that way.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And he's kind of just like, no, bro, like, listen, bro, I know what you think you're bad. You're chatting to me like this. And just like, look, don't chat to me like that. I'm thinking I'm not even trying to anyway.
Yeah.
It's just like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, 4-year-old virgin.
Yeah.
When they.
Yeah.
It was literally like that. I was literally just being like, look, I can't. And this guy's coming to do, oh, okay, I'm coming to fight you. But, other than that.
So you.
Yeah. Other than that, what else happened this
was
week?
Was it a good, like, reading week for
you guys? Yeah. I managed to finish the book plus
start something else. What have you started?
So I was reading this book. Is it called The Adulterers?
Of course.
The Adulterers? I'll double check it. But I just started it. And it's actually quite funny, man. It's like, you know, it's one of those like those wry British humour.
Yeah.
Books. And it's one of those things. So I like it.
There's people cheating in there.
Yeah, no, some people cheating.
That's like, right up your alley, isn't it?
My alley.
Yeah. It's right up your alley.
Yeah. Right up my alley. So it's pretty good because it's pretty good. It looks like there's a whole question about. I mean, cause it's quite funny in like the first few pages.
Yeah.
So I mean, it looks like it could be a good book. So I'm hoping to see what that looks like. But probably, I think it's called The Adulterers. So I'm going to be reading that.
Can I just interject?
By Penguin.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Alex, that protective thing means that you cannot pop that mic, so it doesn't matter. That's why I brought it closer. Just wanted to point that out.
Why? Because why did you have to point that out?
Because I mean, I don't want listeners adding us like, oh, we can't hear Alex anymore.
Why
you know?
Did you put it out? Like,
Alex's voice is major contention in this podcast. It's like that voice is really beginning to annoy us.
Nah, it's just one of them things. Like, it's too close. It's not that close.
Yeah. Anyway, so Derek, what have you been reading this week?
Well, obviously, I've read the book, and I'm reading something else, but I'm not telling it. I'm now not telling people what book I'm reading.
Why? Your fans will be so disappointed.
No. Well, okay. Well, I'm all discussing it because it really stops my flow of reading.
That's ridiculous. You're on a book podcast. Tell us what the hell you're reading.
No, I'm not going to.
You didn't need to tell anybody that you weren't going to tell them the book that you weren't going
to
read.
Just say what book you're reading and then you don't have to discuss it.
You could have. You literally just could have said any book.
Yeah.
You didn't need to tell anybody.
But I don't want to lie.
You could have made the silent decision.
Cool, but can you just tell us what you're reading? I don't care about discussion. We're not going to discuss it. Just tell us what you're reading.
No.
So you're not reading anything?
No, I'm not reading anything.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. All right, guys, this week, we want to say, got a few things just
wow,
to shout out.
No one's going to ask me what I'm reading.
Oh,
sorry. Wow.
See, now you're, all right, sorry, what are you reading?
Wow.
What are you reading?
I don't know, maybe I'm not reading anything.
Oh, you're not reading anything? Okay, cool.
Assholes.
I'm ready to continue.
So, I unfortunately didn't finish the whole book for this week because, I really tried, but we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yeah, okay.
So I also started The Children of Blood and Bone.
Yeah, we saw. Yeah.
And.
Yep.
Okay.
Wow, I'm not being rude.
And I'm really enjoying it. So I was so apprehensive going in. I was like,
why are you surprised? Why are you surprised?
I don't know, because obviously I was like, oh, it's one of those ones. Like, people talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, but I was a bit apprehensive. So I started reading it, and it's definitely like the Harry Potter that I should have had, you know, or the culture should have had, I feel. Mm. And like, the writing isn't bad, because, you know, I always like doubt those kind of fantasy type books where they add a bit of magic in and is the writing good. The writing is very good. I think she's
as if to say the subject of magic somehow makes the writing bad or something,
because people like focus on story. It's like we said in previous episodes, isn't it, like they focus on the story a lot more than the actual writing a lot.
Yeah, I think, but with this, like, the writing actually isn't bad. Like, I'm reading and I'm like, wow, like, this is actually quite good to read and quite nice to read. So
you probably just need to read more fantasy.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the only fantasy I've read is, if it's not Harry Potter, it's Game of Thrones. And
Philip Pullman.
Philip Pullman, Patrick Ness, that's it. Oh, God, I should go back to Patrick Ness. That was dope. They're making a film out of those books, actually. So
yeah, I've heard.
Okay.
What's it called again? What's the book called? I know the first one's The Knife of Never Letting Go, but what's the actual...
Chaos Walking Theory.
Yeah, Chaos Walking. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. But what else? I'm reading something by Albert Camus, but I don't know what it is. I forgot the name.
Describe it. Describe it. Let me see if I can get it. Describe it.
No, come on.
Ray, just anything about the story.
I don't want to.
Oh, could you?
I'm like,
you're so. Oh, I bet it's. Wait.
It's an essay. No, it's a lecture. I think it was a lecture.
I never would have guessed it. To be honest,
dangerously.
Oh, okay.
No, let me see. So we got it's part of a bigger group of class of work, actually, but I think it is a lecture. Did you guys receive these from Penguin?
Where the hell you get that book from?
I got like 50 of them.
What? Ray, you do realize you're supposed to distribute them among us, right? They're not all for you.
No. Yes. I thought you all got them.
You are ridiculous.
50.
No, maybe like. Yeah, like a good
Ray,
a good
you're supposed to distribute.
But why
them.
Am I getting them only then? I thought we
sometimes,
all got
them. Sometimes the books come to me and then I distribute them.
Oh,
or they come
to you sometimes.
Okay, so
they
we
never
got
come
loads.
To me.
So you actually thought they sent you 50
they
books?
They were all mine.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry, guys. I will send you.
It's all right.
If
I forgive you.
If I choose to. yeah, there's quite a few. Like, there's like, obviously this new collection is coming out in, I think it will be coming out next week actually, by Penguin Modern. They've created like these mini series. They've got things from like a speech from Martin Luther King. They've got quite a few stuff actually. Like James Baldwin. Oh yeah, so I'll distribute them. So that's what I'm
Thanks.
Also reading. And
since you're caught in the lie,
yeah, hopefully next week I can come in and tell you guys how amazing Children of Blood and Bone was. But shout out Tommy, like, go girl, and please come on the show.
Good, good, good.
If you're ever in, you know, London.
All right, are we all done?
Mm-hmm.
We all set?
Yeah.
Right, okay, so just want to say thank you for last week, people's engagement with last week's episode, our Valentine's episode. Yeah. It's really good to see.
Oh, what did you guys do Valentine's Day?
I slept.
Yeah.
You know?
I slept some more.
I'm minding my own business. Because I wasn't online, so I just watched, you know, I saw people rattled. Looking at watching their MCMs and WCWs in white robes.
I watched a lot of this.
And doing all sorts of
that's
nonsense.
When I started watching Grace and Frankie.
Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's
on Netflix.
So good.
I started binging Netflix.
Boring.
It's so good, man.
Grace, what did you do, Ray?
Grace and Frankie. What were you doing?
Is that working it?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Right. She's just saying that, bro, because she knows whatever she's coming to say is haram.
Wow. Didn't you see Kendrick? Wash your mouth. Thank you.
Yo, Ray, didn't you see Kendrick this week?
No, I see. Yeah. Oh God. Like, okay. Oh my goodness. I saw the love of my life. So when my friend got me tickets for Kendrick last year, I wasn't about Kendrick. I hadn't really listened to any of his stuff that much. So I spent like the last month or so trying to really immerse myself in Kendrick, and I started listening to like his first album, and I finally got all of these cultural references that before I was like, okay, I don't know who came up with this, but I'm gonna use it. But I finally realized. So at the concert, when people were like screaming, you know, when you're just looking at someone in admiration, like I fell in love. And it's not like a falling in love with a celebrity, like a crush. It's like actual love. So now I'm in love with...
You're overdoing it.
You are.
No, like I'm in love with him. Wow, I was going to say something.
Okay, so last week's episode was about...
God, I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Okay, last week's episode was about love. And we read Essays in Love. We got a few emails in suggesting books for us to read. Which we really appreciate, and films to watch,
Derek.
And films to watch as well. No. There was one by a guy called guy or girl, Remy. I'm unsure whether it's a guy or girl, but yes, they said to check out the Alan de Botton's School of Life videos and the Book of Life, his essays that he has all online. So I've looked at the School of Life stuff, and they're pretty cool. They do have some gems in there.
Yeah, some of them are.
Yeah, so they're good. And it's like, is that the one where they have all these videos where they have like a breakdown of certain philosophers, Derek?
Yeah, or ideas.
And certain teachings and thinkings, just ideas, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's pretty good, that School of Life. And also, there were some suggestions for films. So we want to thank you. We might use those films in a later date.
Probably
episodes.
Not, but we might.
We might do. As I said, might.
Mm.
Play nice, Derek. Play
well,
nice.
Well, I'm just saying shit.
But yeah, so that's cool. Thank you for that. Thank you for your emails. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, so also, we've got our live show happening in March.
Whoop whoop.
March 9th at Waterstones Piccadilly. Thank you for everybody that
what
was.
What time?
At 7 p.m.
Oh, 7, okay.
Yeah, so thank you guys for. You know
what day is that?
Or the Friday.
It's
a Friday.
Oh, it's a Friday, okay.
So thank you guys for all your engagement like with the announcement and whatnot.
Early
bird tickets are gone. If you wanna, you know, find out more, get more tickets, you go to www.mostly-lit.com/news, and that's where you can get tickets for the live show.
I feel like
at Waterstones.
Live show is gonna be the best.
Well, you never know. We'll see.
It's happening on International Women's Day week.
Yeah, it's the weekend of Mother's Day, isn't it?
So I'm really
it's Mother's
excited.
Day weekend.
We always seem to do it then, don't we?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We had one that was near enough that time.
And we just want to say thank you to Waterstones as well.
Yeah,
actually.
Shout
just
out,
shout out.
Going to my favourite. I'm gonna get there and
I'm
gonna have my like.
Huh?
What do I always have at that Waterstones? I have my spice chai.
Okay, so
Derek, what's that thing that I have there?
Let's get you get scones, don't you, or something?
Scone, that's it. Okay. Scone.
Whatever. All right, guys. Let's move on. So, Derek's gems. What do you have this week?
So, my gem this week is it's weird as it's going to sound. It's actually a person.
Hey.
Yeah. it's a bookseller called Nick at Waterstones Piccadilly.
This guy
oh, you
that
found
you
out his name
last week.
No, this is a different one. There's two great booksellers there.
So your gem is a man.
It's Nick. Oh, so if you go into Waterstones Piccadilly and ask Nick all about So he put me onto. I think I even know what his favorite book is. I might be wrong, but I think it's Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco. I think that's his favorite book. Because I remember I went in there once and I was just kind of like.
Why is Nick special?
because he's really enthusiastic about what he's doing. And you do find some booksellers, like, you ask them, like, I go in sometimes, like, oh, can you just recommend me a book? And they're kind of like,
yeah, I get you.
Do you know what I mean? But he's really, you know, he's very eccentric as well, like, yeah, the way he behaves. So, but he's really good, yeah. So he put me on to Umberto Eco, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, really, really nice. Really,
so he's
nice
your gem.
Guy. He's my gem, yeah.
Shout out to Nick at Waterstones, guys. Go,
man, the booksellers don't get enough shout outs.
Yeah, go,
man,
find him.
They've got, like, the best jobs in the world, man.
Yeah, I remember being a bookseller. That was fun.
It was fun. I used to love being a bookseller.
Yeah, it was fun. But
I've never done that before.
You like it?
You would like
it's
it.
Fun.
You would like it.
Yeah, but it requires standing up for, like, majority of the
Yeah, day. But you're also arranging books a lot
of
the time.
Oh, I'd love that.
So you basically, well, for me anyway, I was arranging books a lot of the time. Yeah. So I'll just be in
that
my
really
section.
Taps into my anal personality.
There we go. And you just sort out all of that.
Especially when you get good customers to come in.
Yeah.
Not even just good, interesting customers, yeah, who come and ask you, oh, I got this book. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's like Ridiculous Questions That People Ask Booksellers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I remember. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's, while I was reading, I was just like, this is just so accurate, because when I was working in Waterstones in Bolton, people would come in and ask for the most ridiculous things.
Mm.
It was so crazy. Like, yeah. But yeah, that book is hilarious. I had tears in my eyes. It's so funny.
Nah, it's funny. Like, I miss it. Miss it. But yeah, so that's your gem?
Yes, that's my gem. Nick from Waterstones Piccadilly. Give him a shout.
Cool.
What's wrong, Ray?
You okay?
Because I just remember what I was about to say, and I was like, shit.
Oh, we're past that now.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. so, for Mostly Lit this week, we picked the book South
Can
of the Border, West of the Sun by Murakami.
Did you actually
published
pick
by
that,
Vintage.
Or did Derek pick that?
I picked it.
Did he coerce you?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I had nothing
so
to do.
So, what happened was, I was looking through my bookshelf and I saw it there. And a wave of intrigue.
No, you were
crossed
not.
Over
yeah,
me.
This is the one.
Yeah, this is the book. So, we picked South of the Border, West of the Sun by Murakami.
Yeah.
Published by Vintage, and yeah, wanted to know what we thought about it this week. Essentially, it's about a man who...
Yeah, tell them what it's about.
It's about a man who's living a pretty ordinary life until a blast from the past comes
Shimamoto.
Yeah, comes in and kind of threatens to disrupt his life in a way, but... I think it's a good book.
I think I'm a Shimamoto.
And it's about. There's loads of themes that go through that we will talk through during the show. But like,
I was gonna say, you really watered it down.
That's the basic. That's the bare bones.
Derek, what is it about? Give us your impassioned view of the book.
Because I don't want to tell people like what actually happens. Because
the book's about change. It is about change.
And that's subjective.
I think it's about loneliness.
I think yeah.
From what I've read.
But I'm also inclined to think now that from a certain point on in that book, nothing is real. I think okay. when he's working for the
so Hajime is the
as an
is
editor.
The main character.
Yeah,
Hajime. Yeah, when he's working as an editor for like school books.
Yeah,
I think when it gets to the point where he's like, oh, I used to sit in my room lonely and talk to myself. Mm-hmm. I think from that point onwards, nothing is true.
Why?
Are you trying to find that? In there, is that something that you had to search for to make it a bit more interesting?
No, it's not. Do you know what? Because when I remember I read it the first time like 3 years ago, and I at the end, obviously, when Shimamoto disappears and whatnot, I thought to myself, this is really weird. And I thought, so I went back and I thought, okay, I'm gonna reread this one day, and I didn't. And then obviously, you picked it and I reread it, and I was just like, I don't think everything from that point, because think about it, from that point onwards, yeah, where his life is crap, he's talking to himself, suddenly everything gets better. Mm. He meets the girl of his dreams, he gets the job of his dreams, he has money,
he has cars,
he has a family, and then Shimamoto walks back into his life. Everything from that point just looks and feels like something out of Casablanca or something. Oh, he works in a jazz calf. Do you know what I mean? Oh, making cocktails and yeah, he's cool, smoking cigarettes and everything's just cool. The mood is just very smoky. Do you know what I mean?
It's a dream.
I think he's imagining it. I really do think he's imagining it.
You think it's a delusion then?
Okay. I think it's a delusion. And I also feel like...
I didn't get that.
It's really significant that usually when something significant happens, like Shimamoto, it's raining.
Ooh.
I just I feel like...
But isn't that...
Just to discuss his writing. Because obviously, I tried to read him in Kafka on the Shore. I stopped. Something wasn't pulling me. And then... this book starting, it was a little bit like very clinical writing. So the writing, it was very precise.
Very
and clear.
Yeah.
Clean and perfect. And it lacked something. But then there was that scene where, you remember when he had his first girlfriend and he cheated on her with...
Ijeoma, I think.
Izumi?
Izumi?
I don't know.
Yeah, Izumi's his first...
Yeah, Izumi, yeah.
And then he met her cousin. And that whole part for me was extraordinary. I absolutely loved it. I remember he said something like, afterwards he realized that he was capable of evil and he was capable of hurting someone. And it really made me think about how, like, a lot of the times we define characters as good and bad, and solely that when within us there is elements of evil. And he said something like, you know, if I was given the chance to do it again, I'll do it again.
Bollocks. Yeah. Well, then bollocks to him then.
Yeah.
Bollocks to him. Because at the end of the day, you can't say, oh, I have the potential to do good and evil.
Yeah.
But then once you've committed one evil, you continue to do it.
So you made the
choice. No, I don't think he said he continued to do it. I said if he went back,
that is a
and the situation presented itself. I think
exactly, but then that's a continuation if you're conscious of it.
Yes, but I think what I found quite interesting is attractions between people. So the way he felt for Izumi, I think that's her name, his affection for her was very much, it was very controlled, and it was a choice. I think it was very much like it was
kind of like
he had a choice. Like he was in control. And the first time he met the cousin, he was like, oh, like, I knew I wanted her from there.
You do realize this is a justification for cheating, right?
Absolutely.
And you're endorsing it.
I'm not. Who said I was endorsing it?
The way you're talking sounds like you're endorsing it.
But I was like, I understand the attraction in terms of.
So
not because I thought, okay, he was a dickhead for like making a choice to do that, but I understand the attraction in terms of you meet people who you're like, you're instantly attracted to.
He had constantly said throughout the whole book that it was like, oh, all the people that he kind of went out with as girlfriends weren't the most attractive
people, to other people.
To other people.
Oh, I hate that. He was like, other people. I think his wife, he was like, oh, you know, you're very like she asked him like, why are you staring at me? And then she's like, oh, you're beautiful. And he goes, you're the only one that said that. And he goes, because I'm the only one that knows. And I'm like, oh, you prick.
go on, Alex.
I was just going to say that I kind of forgot my point now. But yeah, I think that was an important thing that he kind of used throughout the whole
thing. Don't you think he's very possessory?
To justify all the stuff he did. So with Izumi, he was like, okay, so I find her beautiful, but I'm attracted to her cousin, so I'm gonna just
do whatever
with that cousin. And even when he was with you haven't got this far yet, but I'm going to tell you. So when he's with his wife, he even admits within the book that he cheated several times. He cheated several times with other women.
He probably drops it like a passing statement as well.
Yeah, like a passing statement. It's like, oh, but they didn't mean anything because it is what it is. And even his father-in-law, his wife's dad, was like, oh, yeah, you have to, you know, like, if you want to have affairs, you know, here are the rules for having affairs, you know, don't give them their own apartments, don't do all this, that, and the other. I remember closing the book and being like, wow. So he's actually sitting there and coaching him on how to.
Alex.
Why do you say wow?
Because
I was just, what, me?
What's wow about it?
No, because I was like, no, it was reading it and absorbing it like that. And I was like,
shock, because men shouldn't do that.
Yeah, they shouldn't, but they do it, which means it's not a shock. When you
know, I found it.
But they shouldn't.
No, it's the way he dropped
Alex
it.
Alex is an admirable person.
And no,
he finds that shocking.
He can be. Come on, bruv. If I've heard this 100 times, I can be the most admirable person and still not be shocked by it. It doesn't mean that I I'm like, oh yeah, this is normal.
Well, he doesn't hear it a lot of times because he's surrounded by.
Just because something is, just because I think something is normalized, doesn't mean that I think
no,
it's normal.
But no, but like that, but you know when it drops, you know when something just takes you back just by just a little bit, man, because you're such a troublemaker. But like when
I
it when,
get up and slap you.
But when
you're
it dropped,
so annoying.
When it dropped, I was just like, I wasn't ready for it.
Can you let Alex talk, please?
I really wasn't ready for it, but yeah, I mean, I found it quite interesting that he did that and his whole relationship with his wife and his children and the like, and the like.
Yeah, I understand.
You're so weird.
Do you know what? I really enjoyed the fact that he was screwing the cousin. I don't know why. There was something there that I was.
That was.
Like,
I remember we had a previous conversation with about this and about writing sex, and then Derek, like that scene that Derek was spoke about how saying how he came violently.
Oh yeah.
And I remember.
Oh, this was the unbearable lightness of being.
No,
right?
wasn't it? It was this book.
Was it this book?
It was this book.
No, I don't think so. I think it was the unbearable lightness.
No,
of being.
Because
he was talking about it.
He used those exact
Derek
words.
Is pouring himself a drink. That's why he's not talking. Right yeah. now. He's literally like away from his mic. He's like no.
He's like shaking his head. But like that's
Derek. Please tell us what was it.
Sorry, guys. it was this book.
It was this book.
Of course it was. And Ray, you just showing your ass that you didn't finish it.
What, this book?
Yeah.
But I told them I didn't.
Oh, did you say it at the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You didn't finish the book. But yeah, I was just saying.
It was like, this book, yeah.
I don't think I'll go back because I think Murakami writes that I don't like.
I think you should go back. I think because there's bits in it that are like good
to... You don't like clarity.
It's something. He makes me feel uncomfortable, which is very weird.
Yeah, it does sound weird, to be honest.
So he talks a lot about emptiness.
That's it.
And through his 20s and whatnot. And like, I mean, how did you feel about the way he described it? Did you think it was accurate about how like people like experienced that this decade between 20 and 30? Because it's like he kind of found meaning after 30 when he married his wife and he had his two kids. His father-in-law gave him some land to buy bars.
Yeah.
And he created this jazz bar, two jazz bars. And he was kind of living cushy. He was living, like, well. You see what I mean? And that was after he turned 30. Do you think, like, within the 20s, there's this element for loneliness to kind of, like, manifest itself because of what, for whatever reason? In your opinion, what do you think?
I don't know, because it's usually, like, 30, which is, like, the promise of a decade of loneliness. So...
What?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's usually 30.
Really?
Between 20 and 30, you're supposed to be living your best life, and then you get to 30, and then
let's be living your best life across your life.
It's a lie.
So that's
okay. Yeah, but you know what I mean. And then when you get to 30, it's kind of like if you're not in a relationship or whatever, it's kind of like okay, well, It's like you just basically accept the fact that you're probably going to be alone for an entire decade. And you feel okay about it.
But do you think that's what Hajime went through in his 30s when he started? Because like, he was, what, 34?
I think he went through it in his 20s, probably.
He's like 37, isn't he? He's like 37 in the book by that age, isn't he, or something?
Mm.
And he's with his wife, who's 5 years his younger, his junior or something.
He's actually trashed that Hajime.
He loves his daughters, though. I love that.
A loneliness in your 20s. Yeah. I feel like I've been lonely all my life, to be honest.
See this, Ray? Do you know what this is?
No.
Do you know what it means? What? It means I'm playing the smallest violin for you.
I mean, you can play it. That's fine. That's nice. I do think so. I feel like, because in your 20s, you're supposed to be like hustling and doing all of these things. But at the center of it all, it's all just a bit of a mess, isn't it?
What like, do you mean?
You're hustling, you're busy, but you're not forming connections. You're living in this like vacuum.
But you love that shit. You love the corporate world, the corporate life.
It's not about the corporate world. It's more so like meaningful relationships with people, with family. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you're so busy trying to get this success that you miss out on the most important things, and I feel like 30 is where you
and
get
that's,
them.
That's the corporate life, though, isn't it? You're in your 20s when you enter the corporate life. You're so fixated on becoming successful that you give your
all
the things.
But it's not about the corporate life.
Creatives
have it as well.
Just, no, just life in general. You're trying to set. You're trying to set a precedent in your 20s.
Just about like trying to get something.
You're trying to set a precedent.
You're trying to tell me that creatives are more fulfilled.
No, because them as well, they put in this ridiculous amount of work into trying to be successful. And I think that people who have...
They're trying to set a precedent.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. But I mean, if people... Like, for example, Ray, sometimes you finish work at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I always say to you, I don't know how the fuck you do it, bruv. Like, it's actually crazy to me to be... Do you know what I mean? So, at the end of the day, I feel like people who... Yeah, they want to be successful, but they don't want it that badly. I think you need to just find a balance. But with you, I mean, even with you, you may not want to be successful that badly, but because of the job you have, you still have to do those hours anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But because of the profession you chose, means that you want, there is something that you're trying to get. Do you know what I mean? And I just feel like there's nothing wrong with that. But I think living life, there needs to be something to offset that. There needs to be this kind of balance. Do you know what I mean? So we all need lawyers and we all need doctors and nurses and teachers and all those wonderful people who do ridiculous hours in the world, it would be nice if that wasn't the way things were. Do you know what I mean?
I could, but then do you think it's just a generational thing? Like, do you think this is kind of what it's been like for like time in memoriam or something, or do you think it's just our generation that has to fight more for those kind of freedoms?
Nah, it's a millennial dream.
I'm sorry?
It's the millennial dream.
Are you a millennial, Darren?
And the way we victimize ourselves. Yeah, it is.
Are you a millennial, then?
He is.
Yeah, I am. You're not.
She is.
Are you?
Yeah,
she is.
About.
She just made
just
it.
Just about? Oh, okay. Well, I might not.
Generation Z? Is it a Z? Generation X or something?
I don't know.
I don't know what it is, but...
Oh, my God. They're entering.
They're centennials. The centennials.
Okay, I don't know what they're...
They're after us.
The but, No, I don't think it is. I mean, because of course people, I mean, doctors have been doing these hours for a long time. The corporate world, I'm sure, was even madder than it was madder before than it is now.
But you know what? Like, I think that there's this whole, I remember reading an article way ages ago, a few years back, and it was about this whole element of portfolio careers and how no job is secure. Everybody's doing more than one thing.
Alice fell back into the Bible for a second. No job.
No job.
Alex fell back.
Yo, it took me back, man. I was stressed. I was like, wait a minute, that flash. No, I'm saying no job is secure.
Oh, God, we always wear black, don't we? All the time.
Yeah, like no job is secure. It's Black Panther weekend. I had to. No job is secure. No job is like forever for everybody. So a lot of people are doing a lot more than what they have, and like this whole loyalty to certain companies certain brands are just not there. What I mean? Because just like millennials are doing so many different things
because we have to care about our health,
we have to care about the work that we do, we have to care about all those things. And there are some that just don't really care, and they will fall into that kind of old way of thinking and working, which is fair enough, which is their prerogative. But I mean, I remember reading a while back when there was, I think it was a law firm. I don't know which one it was, but
some guy jumped off the building
because they were overworking him.
I can understand that.
And it's just the mentality of like, I cannot come and die. You see what I mean?
I cannot come
and kill myself for this job when I want to do other things.
That's what I said on Friday, and then I left and went to see the Black Panther. I was like, what legal opinion? I cannot come and die.
Is that thing? You kind of like, you know what I mean? It's that philosophy is that's kind of what we're doing in our generation.
But people tend to come and say, oh, I can't come and kill myself. Yeah.
But they still come and die.
They'll still turn up to work the next day.
You've got to pay the bills.
Exactly. So saying I can't come and kill myself. Like, look.
It depends on how much commitment you're putting into that job. Because you can turn up to work every day and not do the job.
You can not do the job, but
you can do the bare minimum and still get passed, which a lot of colleagues do.
Yes,
in
but you're still there till like 3 a.m. You're still having to wake up at 7 o'clock. You're still worrying about things. You don't get to enjoy your weekend because the only day you really get to enjoy is Friday night, Saturday. Sunday, you're worrying about going back to work on Monday.
And then you're back to work. That's everywhere.
But that's what I'm saying. So do you know what I mean? Like there's still, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answers, you know what I mean? I don't know, but I do sit down and think about this all the time, and I just think the fact that we have to work 5 days a week,
it's a scam,
and then we have literally 1.5 days off. it's just, it's fucking weird, man.
It's a scam. It's a scam.
Do you get me?
And I feel sorry for people in the States because they don't even have, like, a holiday, like, a much of a holiday allowance. I think they have, like, 10 days.
Yeah, well, I think more than that, but they don't have
But they don't have a holiday allowance in places. And I'm just like, wow. And even the minimum holiday that we have.
This conversation is making me feel sick.
It just, it's horrible. It's horrible. Like, anyway, do you believe in, back to the book here, but do you believe in karma?
No.
You don't believe in karma. So you don't believe that because Hajime, right, so he had done all these different things. So he had cheated on his first girlfriend, Izumi, with her cousin. And then he got like a note back from her when the cousin died and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a very bitter note and whatnot. And he was hearing a lot about the way Izumi is has been treated.
Oh my God.
About like, by her, by Izumi, the people in his flat.
Like, didn't pass her grades because man was heartbroken over this little nigga, yeah? I'm so disgusted. This is what men do.
But okay, I feel like
I could have got a better grade at uni. I mean, I got a good grade, yeah, but not that much.
Right, just a minute ago, you was coming to do, yeah,
attraction. I agree.
No, listen, I'm.
What is the truth?
Like,
what is the
functional? Okay, I can handle more than one opinion. All I'm saying is the attraction that he felt for the little cousin. I get it. There are people that I have met that I'm like, rah, like, it's about that. I'm about it with you.
Okay, but wow.
At the same time, he was trash for what he did with Izumi because poor girl, like, failed her exams, didn't do too well, had to go to, like, community college.
Do you think that she was a good character?
She was dull. She had no exactly. spice.
There was no fire.
She didn't have
there
a
was no.
Leg.
There was no vim. Wow.
Hold on a minute. Why is that getting a cheeky mention? What's that got to do with anything?
What, she had no vim?
Everyone
so that means it's okay for him to
no,
come?
No. I'm saying.
But she, he, in terms of
obviously,
she's
obviously,
dead.
in the book, Murakami had made that distinction. It was like, so he's got this dull character here with no, soft edges kind of thing. And then he's got this, like, thing is, even when he described her cousin, I couldn't really picture the cousin properly because it was just a blur. So at the end of the day, like, I don't know, you know, the way that he was describing it, it kind of like the way he kind of set it up in your mind wasn't all that good. You know what I mean? Like, so he'd set the kind of characters, even his wife, Hajime's wife didn't get much of a mention, but she didn't get much of a description.
Everyone said that he was very egocentric. He was all about himself and his feelings.
Yeah. Who? Murakami?
Hajime.
Yeah.
Which is men, essentially. Like, I read this and I was like, yeah, this is a man.
Yeah. most definitely.
I was like, this is a man.
Oh my gosh, you never get to the part when she kind of like corners him.
Who?
His wife.
What? And says.
And it's like,
he was very...
No, like, so, who is she? Like, and then he was like, like, proper just, like, stammering in the corner. And, like, who is she? And then she's like, I know that. She's like, you know what? Just, if you want to leave, go. But she kind of did this very weak thing, which really irritated me. Because it was just like, I found it weak. And she was just like, you know what? If you want the house, have it. If you want the kids, have it.
It's not weak.
I felt like that was just like,
it's not weak.
Why are you doing that? You're putting everything
it's
there.
Moral high ground. That's what I do. I do it all the time.
It's moral high ground.
Yeah. I do it all the time.
So what if you had said, okay, cool, I'll take the kids, I'll take the house then?
No, that's not good.
And I'll invite Shimamoto to the house.
No, I have to offer it to you. I have to be like, you can take the house. You can take the kids.
She didn't approach it like that. She didn't approach it like that. She was like, just let me know. You need to let me know. Like, do you love me? Is it that? Do you like me?
What?
Do you remember when
you had your hand up?
No, I was basically saying one of you talk and then let the other one talk.
Right.
That's why I was doing that.
What do you think though? What do you think about when his wife cornered him in their apartment when he was sleeping on the couch?
Was she a little bitch?
I thought that was so weak.
What do you mean? Well, I mean, Alex, it's easy when you're in a position of power to say that when you're a man, it's easy for you to come and say that's weak, bruv. But at the end of the day, she's actually endured up until that point.
Mm.
So you can't say she's weak. You can say that she's got to breaking point, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she's weak. Do you know what I mean?
I did feel cringe though when her dad kind of manipulated her into buying the stocks.
Yeah.
And Hajime was like, why would you do that? And he's probably going at her. And it kind of makes me remember, like, a lot of the time when you're in a house, a lot of men raise their voices a lot.
Mm. I hate
that. And it was kind of like, literally shaking the table. She was like, you tell me, like, in the previous times, you told me to invest in these things and to do it. And she basically, when she was, like, approached with the offer, she did it. And then he was going at her. But he was, but he was conscious that he was doing this to her. So he's like, you know what? It's fine, change it. But I just felt like the whole scene was cringe anyway.
Well, yeah, because I mean, both of those guys, the fact that her dad is telling Hajim how the rules to cheating, I mean, it's no surprise that he doesn't respect his daughter either, because he clearly doesn't respect women, so.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But yeah.
But I do think his dad was grieving.
Right on, sister.
Go there.
I think his dad was grieving, though, as well. Her dad was grieving.
Yeah, of course he was, yeah.
Because her mum had died.
So it doesn't mean, just because you're grieving doesn't mean you have to be a
family. I mean. People have emotions, right? You know what I mean? You miss somebody that you've been with for 40 years or whatever.
Then you go against their sex. Very emotional.
Please. But yeah, let me just quickly go back, because I've just opened out the book again, because I wanted to read the final lines again. Have you guys ever watched Scrubs?
Yes.
I used to watch Scrubs. I didn't finish it, though.
Yeah, right. There is this episode of Scrubs, right, where Dr. Cox, right, his best friend, dies, but you don't realise he's dead until the end of the episode. The way this book ends, reminds me of that. Do you know what episode I'm talking about? Where he's standing at the cemetery and then the thing is like, where do you think we are? And then you realize you're at the funeral of his best friend because he died, whatever. The way this book ends is like that. And I'm telling you, it's not what it's... I really feel like it's just not what it seems.
Okay.
I honestly feel like Hajim has imagined...
Say it then. Like, is there any passage that you want to read out?
Well, where he's talking about the fact that the rain is beating down on him and all he could think about was the sea. He was the sea. The rain is significant in this book. The fact that it's always there when something
happens. It's a prophetic fallacy.
Yeah, I don't know. Is maybe I'm going to read it again, actually, because I'm pretty done. And I know Murakami. And there's this... you know that... Murakami does this thing where he inserts, like, this miniature story that literally explains the entire book. There's the thing where he talks about the condition that farmers have where all of a sudden they just get up and they just walk off into the sun.
Yeah.
They just give up. Exactly. Literally, my man was
south of the border.
Yeah, because they've been doing the same mundane thing all the time. Think about it. He was doing the same mundane thing in his workplace all the time. I'm telling you, he literally got up out of his mind and imagined anything
the
he
whole
wants.
Book.
So can I just ask, so you know you mentioned about South Africa, they were listening to something. They were listening to, I think, a Nat King Cole song.
Is it Nat King Cole?
Yes.
Patience, wasn't it?
So they were listening to
something. Oh, quick, one more thing. Right. You know the record that him and Shimamoto used to love? I googled it after. That record doesn't exist.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure that record does not exist.
I'll look up.
Google it. Okay. And that's when I was like, oh, Murakami, you cheeky sod. Trust me. The record don't exist. Okay. I'm telling you, the half of this book is imagined.
I mean, it's all imagined.
Well, even, exactly. Yeah. Potentially, yeah.
Wow. I forgot what I wanted to say. Wow, patriarchy. Do you see? He just talked over me and now I've forgotten.
Oh, great. You've been talking over Alex the entire show, mate.
Wow.
What are you talking about?
Patriarchy. You're not about it. You're not really about it.
West of the Sun. The song by Nat King Cole.
I don't even know what I was going to say now. I fully forgot.
That's cool. About Nat King Cole? Okay.
My aunt says if you get something, it was probably a lie.
Okay. Anyway, moving on, Alex.
Are we really helpless when it comes to the way our lives pan out?
No.
Ooh, absolutely good question.
Because he seemed to act like he was really helpless about everything. Yeah, like, he kind of, everything, he was in the publisher, then he met this woman, then he got this good job, then he got these two bars. And
so essentially, fate over choice, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think we are limited, obviously we're limited to our situation, the way we are. Like, you know Jean-Paul Sartre, right? He used to say that, basically we have control over our situation. We we're free to do whatever we want or whatever. Yes, we have choice. Obviously, that's a naive way to see things. So what Simone de Beauvoir came to do, she was like, yeah, that's true, but we have, like,
structures.
Yeah, there's things, we're in a box and we have...
We can move about in the box.
In the box, exactly. Yeah. And that's our freedom, but we can't... Get out, say that we can do things is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think that's it. We all are in our own individual boxes and then we have freedom to do, do you know what I mean? So for example, if I'm in a situation where someone's put a gun to my head.
You're always looking for this gun to your head, Derek.
But I'm just saying, just to illustrate, within that box of choice, I can choose to end my own life, or I can choose to say something to him. You know, you have choices within that box. So I think that's the way life is. I don't think anybody has ultimate
complete
freedom.
Autonomy,
but now. I also think that what some people do is that when they've made bad choices, they then say that it was inevitable as a way to justify what they've done. And I think that's Hajim. Mm. He'd done things that he was really upset about. But then he came to do, well, I was just destined to be like this. It was destiny. It's fatalism. Bollocks, mate. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I agree with that to an extent in regards to the idea of the social structures that put us in a certain space. I think this goes back to your topic, Alex, of regarding to like soulmates and stuff and, you know, destiny
yeah, man.
To meet. I think a lot of the
you
time it's just
last
proximity
week. Wow.
And circumstances. And so as...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I do agree that there is a social structure, there's a box of some sort.
Yeah.
And if that box decides to change and change the parameters, then it's the box that changes. It's not necessarily you, but you have room to maneuver around. Mm. And you have, I guess, the autonomy and the choices that changes the loci of exactly where you are, but essentially you'll always be in that box. Yeah, I think there is fate is fate, but then fate is very like, oh, of course, like you only realize it when you are where you are, I suppose.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like you only say, oh, it was fate, it was
yeah, I do
be,
think, yeah,
but it's in that moment,
yeah,
so it's not.
Because, you know, I've had that kind of same feeling with regards to career choices I've made. And I have said that, you know, like...
I'm so confused. I don't even know where you are right now.
Do I even know where I am? I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Sometimes but you just do your thing.
I'm
you know, tell me when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm just doing what I'm doing. But at the same time, or like even
it's
education...
Right. Alex, you're doing all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even educational like choices and whatnot. When you look back on those things and you're like, oh, okay, so I had to do that in order for this to happen or else this wouldn't have happened in a sense. Do you guys ever look back and look at things like that?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, so you can look at it and be like certain right choice. You know what I mean? Like there's certain A levels that you think that you probably thought, oh, if I chose
to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the whole Robert Frost thing again, isn't it? When you look back, you always do that. You always do that thing
yeah.
where you're like, oh, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't believe in fate. I don't believe in destiny. I don't believe that.
Poor thing, man.
Things are supposed to be how they are.
I believe in destiny. I believe that there's. I think everything that's happening
because
is supposed
technically
to.
Technically, when you think about it, where you're meant to be is where you're meant to be.
But
right?
When you say supposed to, that means that there's a grand narrative.
Yeah.
I do think that there is,
there's
but
not.
There is like there's something that okay
serve
you're going to be there,
God,
and then you
man.
Have choice, and then maybe it changes. But there are like so. For example, if you have a story and it ends in a certain way, you have like choices in terms of how it ends. So at a terminal moment, at a very important moment, you make a choice and that determines the overall ending or even just circumstance of where you're at. So I like, do you know what I mean? Like, I could have made certain choices, excuse me, very early on in life that would have led to different endings.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with grand narrative?
That is like maybe there isn't just one, there's a few, and you know when you have those charts and it's like yes, no, and then you go down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it can be like that, but there isn't anything outside of that. Like it can only be these maybe six ways.
But that's just literally, yeah, that's just basically the fact that if you made this choice, this would happen, blah, 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 and it just goes on ad infinitum.
But maybe that story is told. Maybe there is that overall, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. So make your choice. Do you know what I mean?
I see.
I mean, no, but okay.
I mean, yes,
I don't
okay.
get what you mean, but fair enough.
It just depends on the choice, the box that you do. Yes, no, which one you go down. Okay, yes, yeah.
But in terms of a grand narrative, though, that's what I'm saying.
Like, that's the grand narrative.
When I say, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's planned, though. That just means you're literally going down.
I guess you're
down.
Presented with these choices, but these choices were made.
By?
Like, this is the choice by God, Allah. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Anyway. Okay, final question, then. I'm going to probably ask.
Final
then.
Question.
Should you chase an unrequited love? Because the way that Hajime was chasing after Shimamoto, yeah? Like, he followed her and then, you know, he got paid 10,000 yen to kind of stay away. I don't know if you got that far.
This is so triggering.
But like, you know what I mean? Like, should you chase an unrequited love? And then, like, and then she comes back and then, like, she says, oh, probably won't be back for a while. If your whole theory of the whole, you know, it's all imagined, then fine. But let's take the example that the book is, as the book says.
Yeah.
He's going through his life.
Yeah.
And Shimamoto just arrives back into this bar after all his school friends have come in and seen how successful he is and whatnot. And he's kind of falling back into this in lust with her.
Yeah, but isn't...
Should he chase her?
Isn't chasing...
Through the rain.
Yeah, but Alex...
Who has time?
Isn't chasing unrequited love the game? Isn't that just what it is? I mean, no, it's very rare for two people to meet each other and be like, yes, we're in love. It's always one person loves somebody, chases them or likes them.
Loves
chases
them more.
Or, do you know? Or, yeah, but or what I'm saying them. Is that it's never, it hardly ever is a thing where you both just love each other. It's always a thing where, oh, let me move to this person. Bro, do you know how many times, I'm sure you guys must have loads of stories, like where the girl's just like, or the guy was like, bro, I wasn't even feeling her. But then obviously they were not persistent, not creepily, overly persistent, but just kind of like, let's go out for a date. And then you just think, okay, fine, let's go out. Then you're like, wow, I realized I like this person.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this person might have been crushing on you for the last 2 years. He might have been in love. Do you know what I mean? The story is never...
So waiting in the savannah for like the hunt.
This is what I'm saying.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, so saying, oh, should we ever chase...
Don't wait for me like that.
Should we ever chase unrequited love? We do. That's just...
We
do. The norm to me anyway. That's the way I see it. I feel like someone who says, I'm not going to chase somebody I'm in love with, isn't really in love then, are they?
That's a lie.
Nah, unless they're married, Ray. We all know you're an expert in that division.
I'm not married.
yeah, but he might be.
That's a lie. Derek!
You're actually really trash. Wow.
Okay, so, it's so weird because a lot of the times... I don't know if I'm like, oh, should I just share?
It's up to you, up to you.
I don't know. I just feel like when I've liked someone, I never like someone straight away.
But don't you have a penchant for guys who are unavailable? Like James Bond has a thing for women who are unavailable.
Do I have a penchant for men who are unavailable? Yes. I'm not own up to that.
Alex is like, Derek, lower your volume.
Like, why are you so loud for?
I know, like, please respect me.
Big broadcast.
Okay, the thing is, like, wow. Like, for example, like, the one unrequited, I don't even think it was unrequited because, like, he like, liked me in the beginning and then I wasn't there yet. I was like, oh, like, no, you're like a brother to me.
Yeah, right,
And then when I was like, rah, like, this could be a thing, he was like, I don't know, I'm not feeling it. There's someone else.
Took too long, man.
Do you know what I mean? I know.
Or he was just playing that immature man game.
That's true. So, I think I've read something about how, like, unrequited love is the perfect form of love because it's not tainted with somebody else's views. It's just, like, you just really...
You read that in Alain de Botton.
Did I? I don't think so. No, I didn't. I knew about it from somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
I'll find the quote and I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
But that's a very triggering topic for me because I feel like...
Why? Alex is sweating more than Ray.
Why is he sweating?
I don't know.
What? It's hot in here, man.
Why are you sweating?
I'm just...
Are you okay?
Continue. I'm doing fine in my corner.
I just feel like...
I'm doing fine in my corner.
I know. I just... trash. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's I don't know. I don't know if you should fight for unrequited love, personally. Mm. I would say no, because I like being loved. Do you know what I mean? Like, I like someone... And I feel like the only way I actually like someone is when they show me that. And then for a very... Sorry. Yeah. For a very, like... They have to, like, consistently show me that. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Let me allow myself to feel this way. Because I'm quite, like... I don't want to say scared, but more so, like, apprehensive, I guess.
I get you.
To, like, enter anything.
Yeah, I get you.
So I have to know that, okay, you're about me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So unrequited love. Like, if I like someone and they don't like me, I'll just be, like, I'll just sit in my corner and hide it as much as I can.
And stay pim.
And stay pim. Like, I would say, girls, if he don't like you and he don't show you at first, stay pim. Don't say nothing. Because these hoes ain't loyal.
Yeah, try and have the moral high ground.
I love the moral high ground.
But you know when they flipped it on you, like, you know, like I said in the book, like if you said, okay, fine, I'll take the kids, I'll take the flat.
You're like, nah.
I'll take the business.
You're like, nah.
Like, well, what do you want? Like, you can have the cottage in the country. Yeah. And go.
Nah.
Like, yeah. I would be like,
I love having. I feel like
I always do that to see what the reaction. What, right? Would be.
Remember when I've had happen with like the Black Panther thing, and I was like, Alex, you can go to the.
Oh street. My god, you were irritating me.
But the only reason why I said that is,
but I thought it was the wrong question.
No, so I like being. I don't know why. I feel like there's something very like self-destructive in me.
But it doesn't really work sometimes because it's just like, well,
I like being the sacrificial lamb.
Do you know what
you
that's
know?
Like?
It makes me feel like I'm doing something bigger than what I
dead.
Am.
Do you know what that's like? That's like saying which eat. That's like saying eat. No, you eat. But it's like, I'm fine. You eat. No. Yeah. You are full,
yeah.
But you should eat the food because yeah. You are full.
But I'm okay that I won't.
That's dead.
I love to take paracetamol for someone else's pain.
You will starve.
I love to be like morally high. I'll be in pain, but I like it in a certain way, and it's awful. I don't even know what it is.
Okay.
Are you done?
Are you done? Derek, high five. Excuse me, Uncle. Yes.
The timing was perfect.
That was perfect. I love you for that.
Oh my god.
Right. Yes, Mbaku.
Yes, Mbaku. Alright, so we ran up that topic. Let us know. What do you guys rate that? What do you guys think of the book? Rate it out of 5.
First time I read it, I would have given it a 5. Now, 2.5.
2.5?
Mm.
Ray, out of 5 from what you read in the first 50 pages?
You just shut your mouth.
That's all you have.
3. I would do 3.
Okay.
What would you do, Alex?
I'd probably say 3.5, 4.
Yeah. I saw the rating on Goodreads.
Yeah. All right, cool. We'll be back. And we're back. All right, so best life reads this week for me. I want to ask you guys a question before I actually talk about the book.
Ooh, deep.
Do you have compassion for yourselves? Do you think that you have self-compassion?
Elaborate.
Do you think you give yourself... You know when you have compassion, the same feeling that you have compassion for others when they go through certain things, when they have, when they're going through certain emotions, through certain periods, that same quote-unquote feeling that you're supposed to have in compassion with them, understanding their feelings, understanding their process, and trying to help them through that. Do you help yourself through that? Do you have patience with yourself, essentially, when to get through certain things?
No.
You don't? What makes you think that?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably because of my rampant self-loathing that I have no compassion for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think as well, it's just to do with the fact that when you have compassion for someone, it, like you said, it comes down to you trying to understand their situation. But with your own personal situations, you already know how the situation came about. Do you know what I mean? I guess there's self-reflection, but I don't think that means that you're compassionate. I think it just means you're trying to understand how you got yourself into a situation or why something came about.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't believe in the this whole concept of self-love. I think it's silly. But that's just me, innit? So
you don't believe in that? Why do you think it's silly, just before we go on to Ray?
Because I just don't think... I think when people say, oh, you should love yourself, it just doesn't make sense, bro. Okay. Like, I think we've had this discussion before. I think that the fact that we flee from destruction and we're all about self-preservation just tells you that there is an element of self-love without you having to do anything.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It just it this, I don't know, this self-love thing, man, seriously, I really feel like it's just something that is being forced upon us. It's like a I don't know how to explain it without sounding really like pretentious and silly, but it is literally like us being more inclined to be consumers of certain things. Do you know what I mean? Like,
okay,
or it make us more inclined to be selfish.
Mm.
I just don't think that those two things are good. So,
okay, Ray, do you have self-compassion, patience, and love for yourself?
None at all.
Really? You ain't got self-love?
You did a whole 10-point thread on why you love yourself. I mean, this is kind of where it stemmed from. I cannot lie. I mean,
I think
I was like, okay, let me think about this.
For
Valentine's Day.
You know what? I think that's. I had to be very conscious about what I like about myself. But in my everyday life, when I live my life, I don't go around thinking, I love my opinions. I love that I am so passionate about things. Mm. I don't go around thinking that. I think I'm very self-destructive in that when a situation presents itself, as much as it doesn't seem like it, I try and make it better for other people. Mm. And so I think it goes back to the whole idea of liking suffering. I don't like suffering, but I feel like if I'm suffering and maybe someone else isn't, then so I'm
it's
doing good.
It's selfless in a roundabout
it's like,
way.
It's like being selfless but suffering. And a lot of the times I was talking to one of my friends and a situation happened and I was like, you know what, I'll take the brunt for it. And I feel like I'm always taking the brunt for things. And she's like, yeah, but other people don't care. If, like, for example, I really get off this feeling of me taking the brunt for things and it being recognized as something. Like, oh, look, Ray's suffering. You know what I mean? And she's like, people don't care. So you're actually just suffering for no reason. And I think that I have self-love in that I love the woman that I am. I love the woman that I'm becoming. I love my friends and I love people around me, but I don't think I have self-love consciously. Like, I don't consciously enter a situation being like, what is the best outcome for me? I think, what is the best outcome overall? And if I'm suffering for it, then so be it. Do you know what
okay,
I mean?
Okay, yeah. No, I see you. Cool. For me, I don't have patience with myself. And there's like this kind of thing that you're constantly pushing yourself to do things and not appreciating each step that you make and each thing. So therefore, I don't feel like I'm that compassionate with myself to think you're doing this, it's making you feel this bad. Stop. Therefore, you can kind of like appreciate the rest that comes and do the rest that's next. And it kind of feeds into this whole thing about like self-comparison as well, comparing your achievements with other people. And trying to figure out, especially in this world of social media, when you're constantly presented with people's work and people, what people are doing with people's brands and stuff. You know, if somebody's writing more, if somebody's in more things, if somebody's creating more or working harder, you kind of start to beat yourself up in a way that, in a very internal, like, you know, destructive way that isn't conducive to anything. And it kind of makes you want to constantly put things out, and then that what exhausts you, and you end up feeling exhausted in the end. So so to kind of round up that then, I found this book my friend sent me this book. It's called Self-Compassion, and it's like by this doctor called Christine Neff. And she basically just talks about how you place yourself in the world, how self-compassion is different to self-esteem, and how appreciating yourself and where you're at and what you do is completely different to you having the utmost confidence in the grand scheme of things. Do you see what I mean? She's an example, like if you've had a bad day at work and then you're kind of projecting onto other people as you come, like you're not appreciating how bad the day was for you. You're just projecting it out onto other people so that they can feel just as bad. And then it becomes this twofold thing where everybody is kind of projecting to one another, and then it creates arguments, it creates destruction, and then ultimately truths end up coming out that don't necessarily need to come out at that time.
Do you
know, for example, if you are, for example, some people, if they're arguing with their partner,
right,
a lot of it is stemmed from an effect that they, that happened in the day or something, something very minor that they start to pick at.
Yeah.
And then that, because that builds into a bigger argument, and then there becomes where there was room for healthy conversation about nitpickings in a relationship, they start to argue about the things that are relative, like through minor things, through minor windows, mm-hmm. to talk about the bigger things. And I think anger is the way to kind of like approach those things. You know, I mean, if you're having a conversation, a healthy conversation about something in a relationship, I think that's important to sit down and have that conversation healthily.
Yeah.
Whereas like having the argument because you had a bad day, it doesn't, it kind of will bring out, it'll invoke feelings that are just really, really much more negative than necessary. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? But yeah, so the book is called Self-Compassion. I mean, I put that forward because I feel like there's a lot of people who are writers out there who are working hard in their businesses, who are working hard doing, trying to get, reach their profession, but you're not being compassionate enough with yourself. And me too, I've like sat down and thought, I want to do all these things, but it's so important to sit back and look at and think, all right, I've achieved this much, how much can I realistically do? And can I appreciate how far I've come with it? And that's kind of what I wanted to bring to the table for Best Life Reads. Let me know how you think about it, and we'll move on.
Yay.
Yeah?
Thank you, Alex.
No worries. Mostly Flicks. What did we watch this week, guys?
Yo! We watched...
So, okay, so we were supposed to watch Best Man. I mean, we'll watch Best Man next week, but obviously it's Black Panther weekend. It's Black Panther week.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I mean,
I didn't know it was a thing either.
I mean, it released this week. It was released this weekend when we're recording.
Black people doing too much again.
You know, it is black people doing too much.
But so I was talking to Derek.
They're doing enough. They're not doing too much.
And I saw a few things that he wrote with regards to response of Eric Killmonger.
You were stalking my Twitter.
I was talking.
I'm even on private. So how are you stalking?
Mostly lit.
Oh,
see, you know.
Are you gonna go and unfollow me?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So I was talking to Derek, and he was like, "What did he say?" He said, "So someone was cussing." I actually said the same thing. I thought Eric Killmonger. The first time I met him, I was like, yeah, like valuable discussions with regards to like immigration and holding people account to helping others with regards to Wakanda and how they secluded themselves from the rest of the world. And the second time I saw him, so this was last night when I watched him, when I watched the film again, and I was like, rah, like you're really childish. So my man came into Wakanda and... He got the throne.
Yeah,
he got what he wanted. Yes, darling.
I was going to say, 1 second. Sorry for the spoilers. You should have seen it this weekend. Yeah, sorry, this is coming out on a Monday.
I don't even know. I think you should just stop recording.
It is what it is.
Just, like, leave.
It is what it is.
I don't even want you to listen to this.
It's going
to
be spoilers. It's going to be that. Sorry, continue. Yeah. So he rolls into Wakanda,
gets the throne, and my man's doing, let's save the rest of the world.
I haven't seen the sunset. My father said the sunset was so nice in Wakanda. I'm like, bitch, you stupid ass.
So, you said, Derek.
I was just about to ask you, what has this got to do with me?
Okay. So someone was like, oh, you know, he like misinterpreted his like abandonment issue.
Yeah, I saw that tweet. I saw that.
And then you were like, nah, like his father obviously fed into his knowledge of the fact that Wakanda needs to do more to help the rest of the world.
People conveniently forgot about that bit.
I actually don't believe that Wakanda needs to do more to help the rest of the world. I think Wakanda needs to stay as it is. It needs to stay separated.
To mind its own business.
Because this is how like Mao's China, this is how China got big, do you know what I mean? And got into one being the biggest economy. Mao's China, okay, separated itself from the white man's world and the world in general, and it was able to refocus on internal development and stuff. So now China is one of the biggest economies in the damn world, do you know what I mean? And so is Wakanda. Wakanda.
Yeah.
Wakanda. Wakanda. Okay. And so Michael B. Jordan's character, Eric Killmonger, yes, darling, put your hand down. I'm not here for it. He wanted to go out. When he got the throne, my man wanted to go out and distribute weapons. Not even, like, technological development or, like, learning programs, which is what T'Challa, beautiful, beautiful man, by the way.
No, it was Nakia that wanted to do that.
Exactly. Right. So
Hold on a minute. Yes, hold what, the fuck what? Up.
Right, hold the fuck up.
Look,
yes,
I'm really tired of this narrative.
Okay,
look,
yeah, let's go. Let's go. Let's do it.
Why the fuck, yeah?
Yeah.
If you're an oppressed people, mm-hmm. do people expect us to take the moral high ground? This is what is annoying. Why are we supposed to take the moral high ground?
What do you mean?
Why can't we beat them at their own game? Look, in Wakanda, the way Killmonger was mm-hmm. talking, look, there are millions of oppressed people
yeah.
who don't have the means to overcome their oppressors.
Right.
No. Why? Listen to what I'm saying.
So you're saying give weapons to these people to fight them, right?
I'm just saying we shouldn't be like, oh, no, we can't do that. Bruv, they've done it to us, yeah? Why the...
But this is the thing. Wakanda doesn't say it's us because other people, like Eric Killmonger, they think him as an outsider. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, let's forget about African Americans and their obviously their idealization of African continent.
Yeah,
okay,
identity, yeah.
That,
and
obviously, kind of, that was apparent throughout the
and
whole
And obviously, yeah, the movie is a critique of Hoteperi. It clearly is. What I'm saying is that even within Africa, the countries that were colonized,
right.
of course, Wakanda's aware because of that cheap joke that Shuri makes about, oh, don't scare me like that, colonizer. Whatever. They're aware of all of this stuff. So the fact that they're like...
Don't scare me, what? Colonizer.
Yeah, it was cheap.
Oh, the cheap shot. Right to
it
the...
It was.
I'm going to slap you.
Right to the throat.
Continue.
But yeah, what I'm saying is that basically... Oh, fucking hell. I forgot what I was saying. What was I saying? Quick, put me back on track, Alex.
Eric Killmonger. Empire.
Something to do with
take the moral high ground.
The moral high ground, of course, yeah. Exactly. So if we're aware of all of this, the oppression that we've had to face,
right?
Why can we not then turn around and do exactly, like, you know, at the end of the movie when T'Challa's like, you've become them. So fucking what? Mm. Okay, I've become them. I don't care, bruv.
Do you know what?
It's just like what Daniel Kaluuya's character said.
Daniel Kaluuya's character was a
he was like
Wakanda
listen,
first.
Listen to what I'm saying.
He's not Wakanda first.
Yes, he was.
He said
the Wakanda first is Okoye. She is the embodiment of Wakanda.
Can I finish?
You can finish.
He said, in the future,
right,
there's going to be the conqueror or the conquered.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be the former.
Mm-hmm.
He told no lies, bro.
He told no lies, but in terms of taking it intricately, one, he was a shit friend. He was a shit person, okay?
True.
How was he a shit friend.
Right, Ray, he was a shit person.
You guys are really coming to idealize patriotism.
Can I have my point?
Patriotism, it has nothing to do with my point, the fact though. That it's... Also, actually, not even that, right? Ray, I think you're taking Wakanda as this isolated place that isn't going to be interacting with these white people. These white people are...
It is
England
it is.
And its allies are trash.
Mm.
So when they come in contact with Wakanda, I'm just thinking of how historically it's played out. You think England and Mr. Martin Freeman is going to be playing these people on an equal playing ground?
Ray.
He said, "What are farmers? What can farmers give us essentially?
Mm.
What can they give us?"
Imagine
that.
Are you crazy?
What?
You do realize Wakanda has fucking vibranium. They have weapons. They have the spears that can take out a tank. You really think that Great Britain...
I ain't going to risk that. I'm not going to risk that, baby girl.
No,
I'm not going to do it.
You're ridiculous.
No. Do you know what I was thinking, though? Because, like, the way that the mentality of the colonized
mm-hmm.
entering a country where they've never been colonized, that was very important as well. You know, the Michael B. Jordan, when he sat down and said the sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire again, that's what the British said. The sun will never set on the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was really triggering because I felt like, you know, you've come from a colonized state, you've come to kind of make it this thing. Like, you know, you've got three ideologies sitting there. You've got Nakia who wants to go and be diplomatized. The whole, like,
Nakia,
you know,
had a stupid ass naive ideology.
No, because you
we
know,
can help Wakanda.
No, because guys, one
can
sec, one,
you let
one,
my man
one
finish?
Sec, one sec, one sec. Because you know, the first scene that we saw Nakia, it was the Boko Haram, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, the kidnapping of the girls in northern Nigeria.
Boko Haram? I don't think that was.
Well,
that was
I mean, like the kidnapping of the girls in
that was the implication.
That was the implication that was there, and I was like, and you know, she wanted to go out and. She wanted to go and help that and be a part of the change to kind of make that different because they can, because their knowledge, you know, obviously Wakanda had people that went out and studied things and brought it back to make Wakanda
greater.
What it was. and to learn and to do things that are better.
What?
So wouldn't is that not what the story was when they like that? How do you think? How do you think
she
they got to such
calling in the fact that she went out and
outside of Nakia? I'm just saying, yeah. In general, Wakanda.
They had spies about, but I don't think...
Exactly, but did they not go and learn and then come back?
I don't think those spies were out there to try and make Wakanda a better
over
place.
Over generations, man. Obviously,
but
this
essentially,
is such...
it was all about making sure that Wakanda was a better place because when T'Challa was back into the...
Safer place.
Yeah,
but obviously,
no, because...
but over generations and years and years and years of like looking at the rest of Africa and then looking at Wakanda within it, you know, I would have thought they would have sent people out to go and
they
learn
did.
Things and to bring back. But anyway, but what I'm saying is that there's several ideologies within the whole film, and you've got the whole, and it kind of made you think how important, like what nationalism, like black nationalism, the kind of, you know, setting aside what it looks like now and how, you know, when Eric Killmonger came and was talking about, we're going to put the weapons out and we're going to cause destruction. But then there's also Nakia who was like, okay, we're going to make it, we're gonna do an outreach. We're gonna go out. I'm gonna try and help the cause and do all this stuff. There was those two balances there, and I felt like that was really important to see.
Yes.
How to kind of make it, yeah, a better world.
Yeah.
In my sense, I don't really agree with Killmonger.
I don't agree because I thought he was childish as fuck. Anyways, so what I want to say is a criticism to your point, Derek, with regards to
what a surprise.
Yeah, what a surprise with regards to your patriotism. So I don't, like, personally for me, Wakanda is like a really perfect place where black people live in harmony, where there's technological advancement, where people like are living in a very amazing place, right? For me, like, Wakanda is like heaven, do you know what I mean? And you criticize the idea of Okoye putting her love of Daniel Kaluuya's character beneath Wakanda, right? Excuse me, my darling. Can you answer the question?
I'm listening. Go on.
Right. So you were like, oh, I don't know why you man would be, you know, putting patriotism ahead of like this love between these two people. Mm-hmm. I wanted to criticize that because personally for me, I think what she did was absolutely fantastic because it wasn't even just about Wakanda. It was about what she believed in and the fact that, no, we shouldn't be doing X, Y, Z, sending out weapons to these people. We should be doing the right thing for our country that we live in, day out, for our citizens. You're saying, oh no, she should have put that beneath her love for this man who was explicitly betraying the ideals, not even the country, because that makes it very patriotic, but the ideals in which she stands on and the ideals in which she like stands for. Why the fuck is that?
You've literally just added all of these bits.
I'm not, because I think because... maybe what you failed to see is that you thought she was protecting Wakanda, but I thought she was protecting the values that she holds. She really values and she really loves the values in her country.
If she really was, mm-hmm, yeah, trying to protect the values of Wakanda,
right?
Yeah, she would have killed Killmonger listen to what I'm.
She's morally correct.
No, she would.
You.
No, she would. No, she would have. Because
she would have.
I don't think so.
No, because when Nakia went to her and said,
yeah,
Okoye,
like,
are you coming?
I
are you coming?
Stand for the throne.
She stands for the throne. So that
right.
means she's not.
But Killmonger was, in terms of throne wise, like, he was a bad king. But he was the king of Wakanda.
Exactly, but she still turned on him and said, you are not fit to be a king. He was still the king.
But she maybe
still
she
betrayed him.
That later.
Mm-mm.
You're not realizing what I'm trying to say.
She knew that from when they were fighting in the duel. She knew that.
I don't think so. I think she just really loved T'Challa.
Firstly, her patriotism is inconsistent. Now you've said this, I have to really point this out. And also, in my opinion, patriotism is when it comes to things like war and stuff like that, is always a bad thing.
It's
anyway.
A bad thing because the countries that we live in are not great. They're not doing anything for us. But if a
regardless
country
whether it's great or not.
No, but if a place was doing something really, really right, and
we went right in there with the political discussion.
No, but if like a country or a group of people were really protecting its citizens, were doing the right thing, why would you not say, yes, I'm here for these ideals that are basically forming the blueprint of this place?
But we're looking at it.
I would totally be for it.
You're looking at it from an idealized, from a point where we're idealizing this country, and we're looking at it and thinking we need to protect it at all costs.
I don't know why Derek is looking the other way.
You know what I mean? Like you're looking at it from that way, Ray. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like, and that's important to look at it from that point. But you also have to remember its position in the world within the context of the film and the show. There are people in there that are growing up patriotic to the country. and people in there. You know, obviously Wakabi, who played Daniel Kaluuya's character, he had one intention
to kill Claw. Yeah,
and he said to T'Challa, growing up, you know, he's like, you know, bring back Claw. That's all he wanted, and that was enough for him to not bring back the guy to ruin his whole ideology of the whole thing. He wants, you know, to maintain power. He wants the power to continue within Wakanda and the like. So I feel like that was a very, like, it is important, but we've got to remember the world views in which we're looking at it from.
Absolutely, I agree.
Okay, moving on. What about the...
Go on, what about
I was
the...
I was going to say, what about the characters? What do you think about the way the characters were portrayed?
Oh, like, fantastic. There was not one... I mean, the person who was the least memorable in that movie for
was
me...
Was still memorable.
Still memorable, but the least memorable was...
Io.
Agent Ross.
Well, he didn't need to be. Who was he?
Hey, oh, she's so buff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very buff.
Perfect. As in, I can't even. Her face is just.
See, I thought, you know, someone tweeted. There was a post that was just like, oh, Marvel's now missed another chance to do. Representation. But I was a lesbian in the Ta-Nehisi Coates comic. She's a lesbian. She has a lover. But she's.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that article then? Because I put it down to time.
And
the way that, like, the way the story was progressing, there was no time to focus on the Dora Milaje. There's no time to focus on the individual stories within the Dora Milaje. So they had to focus on, obviously, it was a civil war within Wakanda. And they had to focus on that. There was no time to focus on the personal relationships within.
Alex, you know how easy it would have been? They could have, you know, when Killmonger killed somebody, Killmonger could have killed Ayo's lover and then she gone crazy. Bruv, in Thor Ragnarok, yeah.
All right, that makes sense.
In Thor Ragnarok, they made it so clear that had a female lover, because in the flashback, it showed that Thor's evil sister killed her lover and then she, do you know what I mean? Like, bruv, it's not difficult. Come on. People are reacting and doing, oh, did you ask this question? All these other movies, they're just being homophobic.
No, that makes sense. Right? I do think it should have been in there, but I'm thinking, like, was it down to time or was it down to just overlooking? Okay, then cool.
I mean, I don't know. But yeah, the characters were great, I think.
They all stood alone.
Who was the best character in that movie for me?
Who was it?
Okoye.
Yeah, Okoye was significant.
And
love Shuri.
Probably. I like Shuri, yeah. M'Baku, I like M'Baku.
I loved M'Baku.
I liked all of them, brother. I think there wasn't one person who liked.
What about Zuri? Did you like Zuri?
I did like Zuri. Do you know why I didn't like Zuri? Because the accent. The Black Panther. Why? You're still in South Africa doing The Last King of Scotland. I don't understand.
Wait, hold on. And you didn't have a problem with M'Baku's shit Nigerian accent, bro.
No, you know what? I was talking to my friend about M'Baku, right? I was like, oh, you know, he's Caribbean. And she was like, yeah,
she's,
you know,
West Indian. West Indian.
Nigerian.
West Indian. Let's correct it. West Indian.
Okay.
There we go.
Cool.
He's West Indian.
Okay. Anyway.
I've been seeing that all of the time. I'm like, why... Caribbean and West Indian are not.
I know, me and Derek are okay.
No.
You guys are trash. Because if I had to say that about any country in Africa, you'd be like, why are you doing this, fam? Who are you doing that, fam?
West Indian. He's also fine. He's like a thick,
West Indian.
Fine man. Ooh.
Why are you two shouting? You two are literally shouting.
I don't know. But,
anyway, yeah.
The experience in watching it was actually so funny because even the whole. When M'Baku challenged him, and his whole dialogue, and it did sound Nigerian. I don't want to.
Because you're just used to like.
Yeah. You know. That we will not have it all, and I was like, really? Wow.
Yeah, but Alex, Nigerian accent sounds like, especially one that has Igbo.
So why did you think he was in? Why did you attach Nigerian to M'Baku then,
Alex? I even tweeted this. It's a Rebo Nigerian accent.
But why is it a Rebo Nigerian
because
accent?
Because you
know why isn't
that... Because you can tell that's the kind of accent he's trying to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's a good one. It means you know it. It's like when you hear Leonardo DiCaprio in Blood Diamond, you know he's trying to do some dead pigeon South African accent. But it doesn't mean it's good. But you, at least you know he's trying to tingle.
But is it not good because it's Leonardo DiCaprio?
Nah.
It's bad. It's a bad accent.
What about Angela Bassett's accent?
It was bad.
No, I liked it. Shuri, Sorry, mother.
Do you know what? Shuri probably had the best accent.
Shuri.
No,
funny.
She didn't. Do you know why she didn't?
And T'Chaka.
Hello, brother.
T'Chaka
had the best accent. Obviously,
T'Chaka had the best accent.
Because
right?
He's South African.
Yes, but Shuri didn't have a good accent because she molded her accent went back to British. There were points
in
where
places,
she, even when
places,
she said
yeah.
like British, and when did, she went on, when she said update, I was like, darling, yeah, like, why are you speaking?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I
was like,
that.
I see what you're saying.
It had to be Forrest. And then there were moments when, thing is, there were moments, because obviously Wakanda is a fictional place in sort of it's not south Derek.
All right,
okay, central okay. Africa,
let's say, for the sake of this podcast,
central
Africa,
central east.
We don't know how the we kind of have an idea, so I personally thought that Chadwick was very consistent in his accent.
Are you joking?
I think he was concentrating really hard on his accent.
Did you see his
Hell was Wakanda not based in Southern Africa?
It's southern,
but not south. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, but I didn't say South Africa. I said Southern Africa.
Yeah, Southern. I would have put
I
it.
Thought
up,
it was more.
I would put it as more central, but it doesn't really
yeah,
matter because it's
put
not
it
a real place,
central.
Guys.
Okay.
It's not a real place.
But anyways, yeah. So, who was your favorite character, by the way?
I liked.
I liked
M'Baku, and I liked Wakabi.
I like
those two.
I like M'Baku. I like T'Challa as well.
I like.
Yeah. I mean, T'Challa. Not T'Challa. T'Chaka.
T'Chaka.
Really?
I did. You know the guy playing the young T'Chaka. That's actually his son, like in real life.
Is
For
it?
Real?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
wow.
incredible.
That's his son in real life. Yeah, yeah.
I would say my favorite was
so
Okoye. If it's not Okoye.
Oh
it
yeah,
has
Okoye.
To be.
Okoye is great though.
Yeah, she's like she had so much nuance. Sometimes she was proud. Then she was sad.
Did he freeze?
Yes,
yes,
like an antelope
in headlights.
And
he winked, and then I was like, "Wow!"
Don't
do you know
that was such a charming scene?
Do you know
I loved
the
it.
The best part in the entire movie.
Okay,
you know, the
to
bit
you, where,
to me, when they're on the water, and they're coming up
yeah.
to the
dancing,
fight,
the
and
dancing.
The dancing, that was the best.
And then like Lupita was
dancing.
Lupita's
dancing was dope because I was yeah. like, "Yeah, I do that."
You see Lupita's bum, yeah? Oh,
oh
my god!
Okay, so basically, in the showings that I went to, I've seen it three times now.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time I went to see it, me and my friend would be like, "Bum." Every time she turned around, bum.
She's so graceful
as
in well.
That East African bum is just
but
doing
you know what?
Something
you know,
to me.
Like, you know what? It did raise quite a few issues. Like, not issues, but it did raise a lot of points within it. You know when Okoye, T'Challa, and Nakia went to Korea?
Yeah.
And it's like, and Okoye was wearing the wig, and she was like, "This is ridiculous. This is a disgrace. Why am I wearing
what,
it?"
She was challenging that.
I was like, it's like such an explicit level of disgust
yeah
around it.
I thought that too.
I was like, all right, fine.
Everybody's
like, you
know. Ignored that bit.
Yeah, they had to
no,
ignore
I
that bit because
that bit was important.
I haven't seen
no,
anybody write about it.
No one's written about it because people feel like it's obvious. Do you see what I mean? Like, well,
you should be loving your natural hair.
Well, people are still writing about obvious things. I saw a tweet just this morning about, oh, I knew M'Baku's accent was Nigerian. I'm just like, bruv, it's so clearly a full Nigerian accent. Like, there's just, do you know what I mean?
He didn't even try.
People everyone were even saying
had,
he was Igbo. Even saying
so everyone
Igbo.
Else tried to do like a sort of far sort of Wakandan accent that was near enough near the region. He didn't even bother, I felt. Because I was watching some interviews.
He had to.
I was watching interviews with Lupita.
You know what?
Denai or whatever. And they were like really trying to be like, okay, this is a foreign country, you know, this is a country that is
right,
like
I do think,
and there's enough, and we were trying to
I
do,
do
it justice,
think he had to be
but
different.
He didn't bother.
I do think he had to be different because they were their tribe had been in the mountains for so long.
Yeah, but they're all different tribes.
What, the Jabari tribe?
The Jabari tribe, just different. You know, the accent had to be different. Do you see what I mean? Like, whereas, you know, on the mainland or down in the main cities, their accent would probably be similar.
Also, shout out Angela Bassett's white dreads. Yes, girl.
Yeah, man.
Stan.
But I was saying, like,
I stan.
But like, even like, you know what I mean? And then I think it was just great. Like, you know, the main white characters weren't the main
shout
story.
Martin Freeman.
And even Andy Serkis. Like,
Andy Serkis was sick.
I think he was sick. Like, you didn't like him?
No.
I think he was sick. Like, he's a great actor anyway. But
he is.
But like, the way he was coming, I was like, you know what? I feel your craziness.
I'm surprised.
I feel your madness. Like,
I'm surprised they killed him off. Because he's like,
that's the shock.
T'Challa's main adversary.
That's the shock. Because you're like, okay, so now he's dead. What's happening now?
M'Baku's his enemy as well. In the comics, he's one of
them. Yeah, M'Baku's the enemy, yeah. I was reading up on it. But But yeah, like, it was a good film. I really enjoyed it.
I really liked it. I'm going to see it today.
I've seen it 5 times, you know.
You're 5 times.
When did you last see it? Yesterday?
I'm going to go see it. Yeah. I'm going to go what see time? It next week.
I seen it yesterday. I saw it the day before. I saw it like...
Just going by yourself?
Yeah. Yesterday, I went with my mentee. Before that, I just went on my ones. Yeah, yeah. And then we went to the premiere. Like, yeah, I've seen it 5 times. And I've got to go again. I'm going with Bertie.
You're going with Bertie? Why am I not invited?
To a screening with Letitia Wright there. She's going to be answering questions.
Amazing. Well
are
done.
Tickets?
The tickets are done.
Let us know how that goes. Letitia Wright is amazing. Friends.
I hate you. I'm going to text you.
Okay, man. Wheel yourself in. Let us know how that goes, because I really want to know what Letitia Wright says as well. Because she did really well. I feel like, you know, accents aside, her character did really well within the whole show, within the whole film. But guys, that's Black Panther. Let us know what you think, and you know, email us in, tweet us, whatever. Let us know. Ray, do you have your issues?
None at all. I've forgotten what it was. Let's continue. Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Sorry, may as well round up the show. Guys, remember to check us out. Remember to get your tickets for the live show, Mostly Lit.
Please do 9th of March.
9th? Mostly-lit.com. There are the tickets. 9th of March, 7 p.m.
Remember, 7? I need to get out of work.
7 p.m. You better be there. And, you know, I'm at Mostly Lit, @MostlyLitPod. Find us. Where can they find us individually, guys?
Reckless are we Ray. Still. At Reckless Frey.
At Garney and Derek.
And it's Alex Reeds. It's been Mostly Lit, guys.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.